and welcome to this special edition Inch Podcast, our Sunday NCAA Tournament Selection Special. I am not Joe Gladyszewski, and I thank the people above every day for that honor. I'm Mike Eidelfiss, sitting here at the Inch World Headquarters, and I'm joined by, once again, a distinguished panel, and considering the amount of time we've worked over the past few days, also an extinguished panel. Joining me to talk about today's selections are Jeff Howe, our Hockey East correspondent and senior writer, and another senior writer, Jess Myers, who covers the WCHA, and in an office with many glass walls high atop Inch World headquarters, Nate Ewell joins us again. Good evening, gentlemen, and you know, today is like Christmas. It's the best day of the year. We gathered around the TV set at about 2:30 and got to open our presents. And what do you like and what don't you like about this year's brackets? And I'll open up the floor.
I think first off, I like a lot of the matchups that I see in the first round, Friday and Saturday. What gives me pause, and I imagine Jess and Jeff, you guys will have something to say here, but you worry about some of the things you see that might show up in the second round.
If I could just jump in, it's not even so much the second round. I hate to almost change the subject on you. I hate the fact that, you know, once we get into the Frozen, I think we've got the two strongest regions are, you know, going to match up with one another in one of the Frozen games. I think, you know, you're looking at most, possibly BC coming out of Manchester, and either Minnesota, North Dakota, or Michigan coming out of the powerhouse region down there in Denver, and you're going to see those two teams playing in one of the semifinal games. When, you know, you could argue that, you know, the winners that come out of those two regionals should end up playing in the championship game. I'm a little disappointed in that, but you know, there are a few other things we could touch on along the way to how we're even going to get to the Frozen first, I guess.
I'll talk about the first round, and you know, there is that potential in the second round, especially out in Denver, of, you know, the all WCHA kind of rematch game between North Dakota and Minnesota. Ryan Duncan last night sounded like, if you want to play that one tomorrow, he's up for it. I mean, they were obviously disappointed by the way things turned out last night to lose to Minnesota, and North Dakota would love to see Minnesota with a trip to the Frozen Four on the line. But the first round game almost intrigues me a little bit more, because, you know, Minnesota had to go up to Grand Forks last year, had to play in front of a very pro Holy Cross crowd, and got beaten that game. And now, you know, I don't know how well Air Force travels, but it is 70 miles away or something like that. And I'm wondering what the atmosphere is going to be like for that Minnesota Air Force game, if they're essentially going to be the road team again.
I think they travel really well. They have a nice set of fighter pilots.
And yeah, they get this huge fleet of planes, like these C-470s, that giant troop transports. No, they. I think you bring up a good point. I think everybody that's not cheering for Minnesota in that game obviously will be cheering for Air Force. And, you know, there's going to be some pro DU people there, and a lot of CC fans in there as well, I would assume. But you know, but that Minnesota's used to that. It's like that everywhere they go, so it's not going to be a big deal. For those people who haven't seen the brackets yet and the pairings, we should probably take a quick run through, and maybe we can throw out some comments on each as we move along. We'll start in Rochester, and these games are being played Friday and Saturday. The one seed is Clarkson, a team that's been playing very well basically since Thanksgiving. I think they've lost two or three games since Thanksgiving. They get a four seed in UMass, their first appearance, and another team that, you know, I struggle to have UMass as a four seed. I think they're playing better than a four seed, but I'll let you guys talk about that. And then the 2-3 game is St. Cloud and Maine, two teams that maybe come into this tournament not playing their best hockey. Guys, what do you like about these matchups? I think Clarkson, Massachusetts is a great first-round game, and probably, at least in my opinion, I think it would be better as a regional final.
Well, I think UMass has proven that they're a better team than Maine, at least in the last couple couple of weeks, certainly last month. So that, looking at that 3-4 seeding, that seems a little bit off. But obviously, the seeding numbers, and we'll get back to this when we see North Dakota and the West Regional as we look at that, but the seeding numbers take into account the whole season, and Maine had a strong start to the year.
I think the interesting thing in that, and, you know, who knows if this is all true or not, but on Saturday night at the Garden, when, you know, the Hockey East Finals were underway and the other games across the country were underway, it basically looked like UMass needed Minnesota to beat North Dakota in order to get into the tournament based on how the numbers worked, and that's what a lot of people were talking about who were familiar with how these numbers all shake down. So, I mean, it's kind of remarkable the fact that if Minnesota doesn't get that crazy diving overtime redirected, you know, sports at a top 10 goal, then, you know, UMass could be sitting at home right now wondering how a team they've beaten four times in the last 2 weeks actually got in, and they didn't. But, you know, I don't think UMass, I think it's, you know, a blow to the ego that they're a 4 seed and not a 3 seed. But, you know, they've got to like the matchup they've got. They've seen Clarkson before. They tied them earlier this season in October. And, you know, that was obviously a long time ago. Both teams are playing much better now than they were then. Although, you know, Clarkson didn't really struggle at all this any time this season. But, you know, UMass, I think, would take its chances against anybody right now. They're a real confident group of players. And, you know, they all felt like they really should have beaten UNH the other night in the semifinals. You know, they've got a great goaltender, John Quick, and their offense is clicking on 4 lines. So I think that should be a really good matchup. Yeah. The St. Cloud and Maine matchup is another interesting one because, you know, Maine's going to have a 13-day layoff before they play, and then St. Cloud obviously bowed out early in the WCHA, so you've got two teams that are really struggling against two teams that are riding high. So, I mean, it's almost like, you know, the Super Bowl of that region is in the first round.
Hey, Jeff, I would imagine you have a pretty good sense of this. How will UMass fans travel? Will there be a good contingent there?
I think because, you know, over the last year, UMass has gone to the national championship in the lacrosse finals, the national championship in the 1AA football finals, you know, the 1AA championship. Granted, they've lost both of those, but, you know, the basketball team has had a lot of hype lately. They got back to the NIT this year. You know, laugh all you want, but, you know, at least they were playing in the postseason for the first time in, you know, a decade or so. So, I mean, the buzz around the place.
Say hi to Michigan while you're there.
the buzz around the athletic department, or, you know, the fans of the athletic teams at UMass is really high. You know, people are really excited what's going on over there. So I think, you know, the hockey fans who have been waiting for this since, you know, the team became a Division I program back in the early 90s, they'll be there. There's no question about that. The problem is it's spring break right now. So, you know, it's the end of spring break. Who knows where everybody at UMass is. They might be down somewhere in Cancun half dead by the time Friday's game even starts. So, I mean, you've got that to worry about. But I think, you know, the real grassroots sports fans who are at the UMass campus will do everything they can. And it's not that bad of a drive out to Rochester. I mean, it can't be any more than 3.5-4 hours, I would imagine. And that, you know, that's only about an hour longer than it would take to even get to Manchester. So it's, I think they will travel, you know, half decent. And actually, if I could add one more thing, they, and even if they don't, from my experience seeing, you know, UMass play, you know, in these big games, I've been to the previous two national championships. Even if the UMass fans are outnumbered 10-1, they tend to be louder than those 10 people. I mean, at the national championship of the lacrosse tournament, there were, you know, there was one strip of UMass fans, and, you know, every time the team scored a goal, they were throwing people in the air, you know, rioting back in Amherst, which you could hear down in Philly. I mean, it's going to be a rowdy group of people. So even if they only get, you know, 2,000 people there, they are pretty good at making themselves heard.
We don't have enough rioting in college hockey, so hats off to Amherst.
Glad to have you aboard. Thanks for bringing something to the table in your first visit to the championships.
I just got an email from the chief of campus police at Minnesota. He disagrees with that statement.
Yeah, UNH might have something to say about that as well.
Exactly. We didn't really talk. Go ahead.
Let me just throw in one thing about this regional that intrigues me. St. Cloud State, I don't know how well they're going to travel. It's a long way from St. Cloud, obviously. But the one thing I think is interesting is Bobby Gepfert, who, let's not forget, played two pretty good years in Hockey East, gets a main team that he's got at least some familiarity with in the first round and possibly another Hockey East team in the second round. So I have to wonder how much him being familiar with those teams and maybe the upperclassmen on those teams being familiar with him might affect that regional.
And something else to keep in mind with that region, especially as it relates to St. Cloud, is that when they played Clarkson in St. Cloud earlier this year, I believe that series was in November, they absolutely demolished them. I mean, yep. I think the two games' total goals were something like 11-2 or 11-. It was, I mean, they just had their way with Clarkson, and basically since that time, Clarkson has been phenomenal. But that weekend, and we kind of highlighted that series as something to keep an eye on. Clarkson went in there and was just really flat and virtually did not show up. Going to the other Friday-Saturday regional, this is in Grand Rapids, Michigan at Van Andel Arena. Another interesting regional, Notre Dame is the number one seed, about 90 minutes from campus there. They get Alabama Huntsville in the first round, the College Hockey America representative this year. And the 2-3 game is going to be Boston University against Michigan State. Guys, your thoughts on those two games? I think the BU-Michigan State game could be an interesting one, but as I look at this bracket, I think it's almost a certainty that Notre Dame can pretty much make plans for St. Louis. I just don't see them having a problem with these teams in Grand Rapids.
My knee-jerk reaction to this bracket is yawn, I think. This is certainly the least inspiring bracket of the four.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, just BU is not playing that great hockey right now. They lost two in a row to end the season, which turned into three in a row when they dropped that game to Vermont. Then they struggled to beat Vermont in that first round series in Hockey East. And, you know, Vermont was a team that just, you know, lost 3 or 4 points to Lowell the weekend before at the gut. So, I mean, that shows how well Vermont had been playing going into that. And then, I mean, they got blown out, although everyone's getting blown out by BC, but, you know, you don't usually see a BC-BU blowout in either direction. So, you know, and John Carvey was pulled in second intermission for Carson Gillespie. So there are some things going wrong down at BU right now. They have some good things going in mid-February, and a month later, it's just scary to see how much things have changed. They could be one and done.
I want to ask a question about Curry. And I didn't see the entire game, obviously, Jeff, you did, but was he pulled because he was that bad, or was he pulled because was Jack Parker trying to send a message?
I could see either way. I mean, there aren't too many games when John Carrey lets up soft goals, and I wouldn't call any of the goals he let up soft, but they were, they were shots that John Carrey usually saves when he's on. So, I mean, it was a mixture of both. Their defense was, you know, less than desirable. But on the other hand, you've got to give a lot of credit to Boston College. I mean, their offense is playing so well right now. I mean, it's scary. It's just every single player they've got on the ice right now is doing something on the offensive end. And, you know, plus with Brian Boyle back on the blue line, he's adding, a little extra of a dimension to their offense. So, you know, maybe you can fault Curry, maybe you can fault the defense, but BC's offense had a lot to do with that. If Parker was sending a message, then, you know what, maybe, I mean, you can't really send a message to John Curry. You can't send a message to the defense. It's the second best scoring defense in the country right now. I mean, what he needs to do is, you know, get this offense to wake up. And the thing that it's just so confusing to see why this offense is struggling so bad. I mean, their offense, their power play isn't playing well either. But, I mean, you've got Pete MacArthur, Brian Ewing, Kenny Rhodes, Jason Lawrence, Chris Higgins, Brandon Yip. They've got, you know, six, seven really strong forwards who, you know, you would think would be able to put the puck in the back of the net. And last year, those are the kids who made up the second and third line. The second line was rolling right behind that first line, which had, you know, Vander Gulick and Zancanaro, and I can't think of the third guy on it, but, I mean, they were playing very well, you know, last year, and you'd think that, you know, they'd grow a little more this year and really be able to, you know, take charge, but that just hasn't happened. So it's not like a personnel thing. You wonder why these kids aren't able to find the back of the net.
I'd contend, though, Jeff, I mean, I don't think that group of forwards is as impressive as, say, BC or UNH.
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
I mean,
I would agree, but I don't think, in what I've seen from them, I don't think that they're so bad that they should struggle to score like they have. I mean,
right.
And when I, kind of getting back to the original question about sending a message, I don't know if, the thing that I thought when I saw Curry come out, or when they came back and the backup was in for the third period, the message I thought maybe he was sending was not to Curry, but to the rest of the team, saying, okay, John Curry is a great goalie, but he can't do it by himself. Either you guys have to do your job, or you know, or this is what's going to happen. That's kind of the message I got out of it. And I know that I caught some of the post game too, and Jack Parker did not look too happy with the officiating, and I don't know what that was all about, but he was awfully irate with what had gone on. And from what I had seen in that game, the officiating wasn't the problem. The problem was BC was 6-2 better than Boston University. There could have been no refs out there, and I think it would have ended up the same. So,
yeah,
leaving. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
The Jack Parker. It was funny. Jack Parker's press conference lasted a little less than 90 seconds on Friday night. I mean, it was one of those things when every single guy in the room, when, you know, Parker made his opening statement, then the moderator asked you a question, and I mean, it was like you getting yelled at by your principal. I think every single person in the room had their head down and just kind of was looking behind them to see if anybody was really going to say something to him. Because, I mean, you could just tell that he was furious. Jack Parker does not like losing in the Boston Garden. I mean, he doesn't like losing in general, but when there's a trophy on the line, whether it's the Beanpot or the Hockey's Championship, he expects his players to go out and, you know, give 180%, not even 110%. He was irate with the performance of his team. And I think just getting back to an earlier point, if he was trying to send a message by saying, you know, John Curry can't do it by himself, you know, I think that's probably a better way to put it. And I think I missed your first point. But on the other hand, if he's saying, you know, John Curry can't do it by himself, I'm going to throw in Gillespie, then he's going to be, I think, you know, a move like that is almost saying we're going to throw in the towel here in the third period, because I don't see this team coming back against BC unless they're able to shut them down, you know, in the third period, because the way that offense is going, they're, no matter who is playing defense, I mean, you get an all-star lineup of Hockey's defensemen back there. I mean, you're still going to need an impressive performance out of your goalie and hope that you can knock one or two home and tie this thing up and get, you know, a break in overtime in order to win that game. So, you know, it was a weird decision that was made, you know, by Parker. I guess that's all I got on that point.
Rook, we lean on you in those post-game press conferences to step up and ask a really stupid question. see how red Jack's face gets. Do you think the outcome would have been different if you wore your retro jerseys? You know, something like that.
So were you happy with your team's performance tonight? His head may have exploded.
I could have asked him what would have happened if, you know, Toot was playing forward for him wearing, you know, Aruzioni's old number or something like that.
You should have asked him if Curry is going to start the next game. That would have gone over well. Well, since that...
Or what is the thoughts of, you know, maybe getting a number one seed in Manchester next week?
Oh, jeez. And maybe they can trade for Chris Bork.
Wouldn't it be fun? And I'm kind of ripping this off from Bill Simmons, but get Jack Parker to do the full like Rick Pitino type meltdown. You know, folks. You know, Jay Pandolfo is not walking in that door. Mike Ruzioni is not walking in that door. Chris Drury is not going to show up in our lineup.
I think he should just should have done the Dennis Green and just said, "You want to hand him the? You want to crown him? Go ahead and crown him. You want to hand him the trophy?" Speaking of,
were what they thought they were.
Yeah, they were what we thought they were, and I think everybody thinks BC is pretty good, and they're a number two seed in Manchester. This is a Saturday Sunday regional. New Hampshire is the number one seed, and they get Miami in the first round as a four seed. And I think the general consensus is that the Red Hawks were the last team in as far as at-large bids were concerned. And then you've got the 2-3 game, which features Boston College against St. Lawrence. And, you know, I think other than maybe the Grand Rapids regional, where we more or less christened Notre Dame as having a pretty easy path to St. Louis, I think Boston College looks the same in as far as having a pretty easy time of it in this region, and that's with UNH, you know, basically playing in their second home arena. But I just UNH this entire weekend really didn't excite me, other than Regan, who was pretty good.
Yeah, you know, Regan was great Friday night, but you know, Saturday he was a bit suspect. I think there were a couple he would like to have had back, but you know, UNH, you can call Manchester their second home arena, which, you know, obviously it is because they do play a couple games there a year, but they don't often play well in Manchester. I mean, the sheet's smaller than at the Whittemore Center, and the student section isn't as crazy as it is in Durham. It's, you know, it's kind of different. But, you know, another point I wanted to, you know, make, or, you know, a question I had to ask, and obviously you guys would know a little bit better than I would because I really only started shaving about a week ago. have you guys ever seen a regional in which a two seed was such a heavy favorite over a one seed? I mean, I obviously, you know, you guys have been around this a lot longer than I have. Well, can you guys think back to, you know, such an instance?
After I went out with you in Boston this week, Rook, I can't remember last year.
can't remember anything after March 15, or prior to March 15.
We've had cases like this before, though.
We have had cases, and you know,
it's usually a case like back. And sorry to interrupt, Mike, but I know that there were games back when there was a 12-team tournament, and you'd get the ECAC team getting a bye. You know, I think back to a couple of those years. I think I remember Maine beating Clarkson. Maybe that was probably 99 in Clarkson's last appearance. But there were a lot of those cases where it was like, okay, you know, this team doesn't get a bye, but basically is the favorite to walk right through and make it to the Frozen Four.
Yeah, there's the theory that it's tough to beat a team so many times in a row, or, you know, this many times in a month or in this kind of stretch, but I wouldn't buy that in this case. You know, somebody was asking a UNH player after the championship game on Saturday night, you know, would you guys like to see BC down the road in the tournament? And I was really uninspired by the answer. I mean, if I saw this person, and I don't want to say his name, but if I saw this person answer like, oh, you know, we'd love to see this, we'd love to see BC, you know, we'd love to get another crack at them, you know, we want to show them that, you know, this is, you know, we're a much better team than that. You know, if I saw somebody really fired up, and you know what, maybe he was deflated because his team just lost the championship, you know, I could be taking it out of context. But, you know, I was really uninspired by this person's, you know, attitude towards seeing BC again. I think UNH really might be thinking to themselves, BC has our number right now.
Yeah, I would agree. I didn't really see a lot of life out of them. And granted, they played the game on the two overtime game on Friday, and you know, that's going to take a lot out of you. But I didn't see a lot of energy from them in the championship game there in Hockey East. And you know, BC's just got that swagger now of you know, they've got so many guys that are playing so well, and they're doing the right things, and you know, everything that they do is it seems to just be magic. Whether it's putting Boyle back on defense, or you know, you've got all these guys who played well at this time last year who are once again playing well at the same time this year. And thinking about, you know, Motherwell and Ferriero and Bradford and Gerby, and you know, the list goes on and on. I just don't see anybody really being able to stay with them in this regional. I think it's going to be maybe not necessarily an easy time there, but I'd be hard pressed to find a way that Boston College loses.
Like I said earlier, their offense has been unbelievable. It's like they're ending games, you know, late in the first period.
Or exactly.
Early in the second period. They're going up by a lot. And, you know, Schneider on the other end, it's 1.8 goals against in the last 10 games. They've scored 47 goals in the last 10 games. You know, they've seven of their last 10 games, they won by at least 3 goals. And, you know, they're smoking teams. I mean, I think, you know, the last loss, and we talked about this before, their last loss was in the Beanpot Championship. And I think anyone who you asked who was in the building that night or watched it on TV would say that BC was the better team. And I think they had like 2 or 3 straight wins before the Beanpot. So, I mean, they've had this going since, you know, for a month and a half, almost 2 months now. And, you know, they do have that swagger, and it's like they're scoring opportunities. It's not like, you know, all of a sudden they're going to run into a hot goalie who's going to knock them down, because, I mean, you know, they'll get so many shots, and it's like 50% of them are unbelievable scoring opportunities. And you need a complete effort from your goaltender and your defense to shut this offense down. It's like I've seen BC a lot lately, and I just don't see you know, a team, not a team from the East being able to stop them. I mean, maybe a Minnesota or a North Dakota that comes to play could, you know, could knock them down. But, I mean, nobody in Manchester is going to be able to beat this team if BC, you know, shows up.
Let's talk about those two teams then. Jess has been quiet.
That's right.
That's a rarity.
Yeah, exactly. We're enjoying it, Simon.
Nice.
As Depeche Mode would say.
Wow.
Going into the final regional, this is again a Saturday-Sunday affair in Denver. Minnesota is the number one seed and the number one overall seed. They get the Falcons of Air Force, who are obviously the 4 seed. And guess that conference switch worked out pretty well for the for Air Force. They're the champions of Atlantic Hockey. They're on the Atlantic side of the Continental Divide, by the way, so I can see where how Air Force, a team in Colorado, gets into Atlantic Hockey. And the 2-3 game, Michigan is the 2 seed, and they get North Dakota, and I think that's probably the most intriguing matchup of the first round. And, you know, I got a feeling there's going to be a lot of talk about this region. This may be the most hotly debated region as far as not only where teams are seated, but just where teams landed. And, you know, we're going to hear it right up until the drop of the puck on Saturday, I think.
I think I would agree. And, you know, talking in WCHA circles last night when it became apparent that this is probably what was going to happen, the immediate knee-jerk reaction among a lot of the people I see, you know, at the Final Five and on a weekly basis was, this is some sort of payback. You know, the WCHA is being paid back for having 4 teams in Columbus 2 years ago. They're going to take the 2 best teams in the league and put them in the same region and ensure that only one of them gets to St. Louis, or at best one of them gets to St. Louis. I'm certainly not discounting Michigan because I know they're a very talented team and can score goals. So that's an interesting opinion. I don't know if I subscribe to it. I do think if you were to line up the top four teams in the country right now, I would put Minnesota and North Dakota among the top four, and probably would have preferred to see those teams meet again in St. Louis instead of in Denver if they are indeed destined to meet again.
Well, they can meet in St. Louis, just not on the ice.
Sure.
I mean, nobody's stopping them from getting together.
Get together and have a sandwich, you know, talk about how cool the Final Five was and stuff. Yeah, that'd be great.
Sure. Talk about maybe Minnesota winning the tournament, but ultimately being the losers there in St. Paul for having to put on those awful hats.
Corporate sponsors. One of these years, Wisconsin or St. Cloud is going to win the Final Five, and the team's parading around with red hats on is going to look, you know, somewhat fitting at least. So last year it was North Dakota winning the title wearing these bright red hats, and this year it was the gold Gopher jerseys with red and black hats, which is, you know, it just doesn't work.
I don't think those hats would have worked with any team. They were just,
yeah,
they were downright terrible. They looked like somebody picked them up at a truck stop on the way to the rink. But I digress. We should be talking about the matchups here. You know, I don't have a problem with Minnesota and North Dakota being in the same in the same region, as long as the committee says, you know, this is the way the numbers worked out. This is the way the matchups work out. Again, I'm with you, Jess. I don't subscribe to any conspiracy theories. But you know, and this is where my beef with I understand. Why the selection committee leans so heavily on the computer rankings and computers as a way to kind of determine, okay, who belongs where. But I think that there's got to be a little bit of leeway to put the human factor in. As we know, as we mentioned in our 4x4 last night, computers don't watch games. Computers don't see that, you know, that Boston College is clearly playing better than a lot of the teams that are, you know, a couple of the teams that are probably seated higher than they are. Same goes with North Dakota. I don't think that anybody would argue that, you know, North Dakota certainly deserves higher than a 3 seed. You know, maybe you get some, I could certainly, and I'm not making an argument either way, but I could certainly argue that maybe Notre Dame deserves the number one overall seed over Minnesota. Not that that really matters in the grand scheme of things, but you know, I think when you take the human element out, and I guess it gets back to this region, you know, I think you got to, I think you're losing something, and I think that this is a case in point where North Dakota ends up being a 3 seed, and clearly they're not 8 teams in the nation right now better than North Dakota, in my opinion.
I think everybody would agree with you there. But over the course of the season, and that gets back to, you know, why New Hampshire is one and BC is two. You can't discount what happened in October and November when you look at seeding for this tournament.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and that's why Maine is in and, you know, somebody else is out, is because right. Maine was very, very, not only was Maine very, very good early on, but you know, they won twice at North Dakota. They won at Minnesota, technically. And, you know, those three wins really carry so much weight that, you know, it's enough to propel a Maine team that, frankly, was not very good over the last, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. And I know they had an injury to Ben Bishop. But, you know, those three wins are really enough to carry them over, put them over the top and get them in the NCAA tournament. But the goal should
Mike,
not. Go ahead.
Sorry. Anybody who saw that Final Five championship game certainly sees Minnesota and North Dakota as the stars of this regional, if not the tournament. How legitimate of a sleeper, if you want to call them that, is Michigan?
You know, that's a good question, and I think that. regardless of how good, you know, Michigan obviously has the talent at forward and on defense to really match up with those two teams. I really think it still comes down to goaltending. And Billy Sauer played pretty well this weekend. He was good against Michigan State. He was pretty good against Notre Dame. Ultimately, that's what it's going to come down to, I think. I don't know that Michigan really is as deep as North Dakota. I think North Dakota is pretty deep, especially, forward-wise, I think they match up pretty well with Minnesota and North Dakota. I think on defense is where I like North Dakota. And I know Minnesota won last night, or I should say Saturday night, but I think I'm still going with North Dakota in this region. I just like the way that they've been playing, and I think Taves is the best player in the tournament, and I'm gonna go with the Sioux.
I would agree. I was frankly surprised by what happened tonight, and credit to Minnesota. And I think I reflected that in what I wrote, but Don Lucia, kind of tongue-in-cheek on Friday night, said, you know, we don't have a chance. Everybody's building North Dakota up. You know, we're overmatched. And it wasn't really tongue-in-cheek about it. It was almost kind of owly about it. Kind of like, you know, I've heard enough about North Dakota. I'm tired of it. And put together a real nice game plan and was able to limit that top line. And hats off to them. With that said, there wasn't a lot of overwhelming jubilation, joy, et cetera, from Minnesota last night. I mean, I think they knew that this was just kind of another step, and yeah, it's a nice trophy, but it doesn't mean a lot, especially after what happened last year, if we can't go to Denver and win two games. And I don't know how they will match up if they wind up a week from tonight or facing North Dakota again.
I think I'm going to stick with North Dakota in that region, and yeah. You know, it's just the experience factor, too. The Gophers are really talented, obviously, but they're really young. And North Dakota has those guys that have been there, you know, three straight years. And the other thing that I really like about them is the way there's a couple things that I really like. Not only the Oshie and Taves and Duncan unit, and they're obviously clicking on all cylinders right now, but Lamoureux's playing extremely well in goal, and I think Taylor Chorney has been very, very good on defense for North Dakota.
I was going to mention him too much.
To the point, we've forgotten about Brian Lee, who's obviously a very talented defenseman in his own right, but Chorney's been fantastic.
Their D, to me, is ridiculous top to bottom, 1 through 6.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what sets them apart from everybody else in that. You know, you've got Eric Johnson, and that's another thing, another point that maybe make later on, is just the ridiculous collection of talent in this, in the West Regional. I mean, if you're within earshot of, if you're anywhere near the Pepsi Center in Denver, and even if you just like hockey, go see these teams play, because these are going to be guys that you're going to pay top dollar to see when they're in the NHL, no question about it. But can you really think of a team from 1 through 6 on defense that can match up with North Dakota? I can't. BC with Boyle back there now is maybe close, but I don't think that they're to that level.
Not 5 and 6.
No, exactly.
There's nobody with a top pair like Michigan's either. Johnson and Hunwick.
Right, and you throw Matera in there too. It's ridiculous that we're going 3-4 deep on these teams and still finding first-round NHL draft picks on defense. And, you know, with Minnesota, you've got Goligoski.
Vanelli, Johnson, Goligoski. I mean, that's a pretty good top three.
That is a very good top three. Although Goligoski, from what I've seen of him over the last 4 to 6 weeks, and I think I mentioned this last week, I haven't really liked what I've seen from him. He seems like he's really isn't as good as he was in the first half of the season. I'm not sure that there's an answer for that. But by all means, I think this is going to be not only an entertaining regional, but I think it could be fairly high scoring too, regardless of what kind of defensive talent there is out there, I think we could see a lot of goals because, you know, actually all four of these teams, you throw Air Force in there, they like to get the puck out and skate. You're not going to see a lot of trapping and a lot of, you know, you're not going to see a lot of that type of game out there. It's going to be pretty freewheeling. And I think that's, guys, unless you have anything else, I think we'll wrap it up for this evening.
We're going to have to talk more when Gladdy gets back into town, so we may as well get back to work here, right?
Exactly. And you know what we should do before we go is...
Take a rundown of what we've got coming up here.
We'll do that. That's a good idea. And if I miss anything, please jump in. You know, obviously, it's a busy time for us. You know, Sunday night, obviously, we'll post our power rankings, and we're working on our capsules for the four regions. Tomorrow, we'll start with the only feature that is run
tomorrow.
Tomorrow being Monday.
Tomorrow being Monday, because people could be listening to this. Who knows when?
Tomorrow being today, probably. On Monday, we'll you know, obviously come back with you know, one of our favorite enterprises of the year, which is the Haiku cocktail napkin, where we feature each of the 16 teams and kind of describe them in haiku form. And, you know, we'll name a player of the week. And then, as I was going to say earlier, the feature that's run for the benefit of two people, and that's Nate and myself, it's the Inch Wish List Draft, which we're pretty certain that we're the only two people that care about it. But it's actually kind of intriguing.
And I know that this is just because I like it.
Yeah.
But give it a read and try and understand what we're trying to get at, because it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. We're trying to make your team better by...
Yeah.
Just trust us. At worst, it'll kill some time at work.
Yes.
Tuesday night, I think we are going to come back with another podcast. Actually, we will Tuesday night and just take a little bit of closer look at kind of the matchups. And, you know, we've looked at more of an overview tonight and kind of get into how teams match up and you know, what to look for in each region. Excuse me, and then Wednesday and Thursday we'll do the same on the website and really get into the nuts and bolts of each of the four regionals as only Inside College Hockey can. And Friday we're right back at it. It's NCAA hockey. It's hard to believe that we're here. But it's exciting, and we hope you're excited too. And we should also explain. We've mentioned his name a few times tonight. Where in the world is Joe Gladyshevsky? Well, as of right now, on a Sunday night, he's in Superior, Wisconsin with his Oswego State Lakers. They won the Division III championship today. Stick salute to the Lakers. They beat Middlebury in overtime 4-3 in Superior. So, as Rob Dibble said, they're world champions of the world. So congratulations to Gladdy and Coach Ed Gosek and the rest of the Lakers. And he'll be back with us on Tuesday, physically, at least. And
Lord
yeah. And we hope you're back with us on Tuesday as well. Thanks for checking out the Inch Podcast. And make sure to come back to InsideCollegeHockey.com repeatedly this week as we get ready for the NCAA tournament.